As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Welcome, Leafs Nation postgame. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne with you on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, of course, the official Leaf destination for all NHL hockey fans, Toronto Maple Leaf fans, after each and every one of the Toronto Maple Leafs 82 games this season. And Ozzy, it's back to 500, just kind of a nice, relaxed, fun, wide open, sloppy, entertaining, you name it. 5-2 win for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the New York Islanders tonight.
Well, you know what? You're right. It was kind of a sloppy game, and it reminded me going back in time to the days when we did go to Long Island, least favorite rink in the entire
NHL.
Now,
why is that? I mean, it's a dump, but why else?
Well, bad glass, just the atmosphere in general. And I'm talking about the 90s. You know, the 80s with Bossy, Trotsky, Podfin, that was pretty neat, you know, especially when I played for the Rangers. But when I then, you know, made the transition to the Maple Leafs, it was just a bad spot to go. And you didn't feel good about playing there. And you know what? There was no coincidence, I believe, last year that this team had only 13 wins on home ice. And the Leafs like playing there for whatever reason. I mean, we need to bottle whatever, goes on or however they feel going to Long Island.
7 consecutive games they haven't lost. They've come back with 2 points. On Long Island. I always say on Long Island. It's fun. It turned a bit mid-1980s as well, Ozzy, when those guys stopped, when the dynasty ended. And before that,
I think it was when Glenn Healy got there, right?
But they had the 4 Stanley Cup championships, believe it or not, without Glenn Healy. And they played to sold-out crowds, wealthy area, so they had the highest ticket prices going. So it had a certain niche. And once it went, it really went. And, of course, they're heading to greener pastures, they feel, next year. And tonight, the Maple Leafs took advantage of that lack of home ice advantage. And even a little thing like weird bounces off the boards that factored in a few of the goals.
I know. You know what? And you'll obviously take those. And I know last week it seems you were calling me Carnot, right? Because I was making predictions as we were watching the game that this was going to happen, that was going to happen.
I cannot believe in the first minute of this broadcast you're already bringing up. I mean, I was going to magnanimously talk about your excellent predictions. But yes, you had been Carnot. You had been, whatever you had said had gone, it was like, what, Bizarro World in Seinfeld. Whatever you said went the other way.
And you know what? It's just the way it sometimes goes. That you're right when you just have a feeling and you're watching the game and you're seeing these pucks bounce and you're seeing, you know, Phil Kessel being, I think, an opportunist, right? When he came down the wing and fired that shot for his second goal, like Halak, he wasn't on his game, but those are perfect shots. I don't care who you are. You're not stopping those shots. And that's, one of those things, as you saw the smile on his face after goal number one. I think that basically summed up the way the Leafs, I think, even entered this game, that they were, you know, feeling good about themselves even after the effort in the loss against Detroit. And it was obviously a lot of positives to come away from tonight.
Oh, from Saturday's game for sure, not Friday's game. And you know, it's so we always talk about that you're going to the subway now. I guess there you're taking the Long Island Railroad home, and not a lot of people are happy. And very few people are doing that anyway, Islander fans. And it's funny, Kessel 2 goals, 1 assist. So for the record, Mark Osborne, first of all, did declare David Clarkson would score, and he scored. And then Yaroslav Halak, very subpar goaltending. So right after that, Ozzy was getting his Karnak mojo going, and Kessel came down, and you said he's going to wire it far corner. He wired it far corner. 2 goals and 1 assist for Phil Kessel. And the other one, though, the one that, and it kind of showed the way the game worked out.
Roman Polak, right?
Totally caught out of position, right?
What was he doing down
in there? Behind the other team's net, and then all of a sudden, it's the kind of game that he gets up, going to skate back, hell-bent for leather to get back in position. And no, in front of the net in the slot where, you know, Espo used to hang out, there's Roman Polak with the goal, and like Espo did, fires in. And from what he could have been a goat on a particular play, when he scored before the other guys got going. That's when you kind of knew it was going to be a good night.
Yeah, and should we also mention how much you dislike dressing 7 defensemen?
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I think, again, that was just karma going the Leafs right away. No, because you were just going on and on, right, when they were talking about, you know, should they dress 70? You can't pull Stuart Percy out of the lineup and on, and yet they dress 70 and they have a pretty good night. And then
Matt Brown piled on because he claimed, like, the one goal by Kessel was he filled in on the fourth line because they only had 11 forwards. But I don't agree because Santarelli was out there and stuff. Like, I think it was like he was trying to chintz away and rationalize. I still am astounded that, okay, you got a game against Ottawa tomorrow. You're going to start getting into these back-to-back games and all that stuff and travel and whatever, whatever they can, whatever people, you know, guys complain about being the rigors of playing in the NHL today. And it's a way cushier deal, but it's also a pretty intense, fast-paced once they play. But as far as travel and all that stuff. So you don't play your fourth line. And I don't know, you're going to, I guess, what's he going to do tomorrow? Not play his fourth line again? I don't know.
I guess not.
There goes all summer working on the fourth line, right? All these guys coming in to give a fourth line that you needed. And there it's for right now in the short term.
But you know what? For whatever reason, it seems as though, you know, Randy is bent on maybe keeping his team guessing in some ways. I mean, that's part of the coaching strategy. I think you often like to have some predictability when the team does play well. You keep going back to the well with the same lineup. And the team played well the other night. And lost 1-0. But yeah. We were raving about what a great effort they put forth.
It was a great effort, yeah.
Yeah, and we're okay with a good effort. And yet... you know, tonight things got changed up. And if we're talking about a fourth line, like, I mean, has it come down to that in Leaf Nation that it's, you know, we're going to win or lose based on the fourth line, right?
Ozzy, that's where you're 100% right. So that's why I'm not, even though it drives me crazy what he's doing about the 7D, you're 100%, the fourth line is not going to be the difference maker in the body of the season. In the body of work, that's the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's Kessel getting 2 goals and 1 assist tonight. It's Clarkson contributing, and it's all those other things that are going to be the difference whether they make the playoffs or not. The fourth line is a bit of a cherry on the sundae if they actually have one that provides energy and can be a bit of a difference.
No, that's fine, and I'm you know, I'm with you on all of that stuff. Interesting enough, as an observer of tonight, watching the defense, okay? So you're watching Polak. He gets a goal. He's out of position. Watching, you know, Phaneuf battle a little bit. And yet Percy, Riley, and Jake Gardner were they didn't really stand out. Did they stand out to you? Did they jump out at you? That they added to the offense or anything like that? They just did not look...
You know what? Maybe Randy Carlyle's genius is Polak would have been the 7th D, and he was the sniper tonight. But no, I just thought it's a weird one to only give up 2 goals. You know, take a look at the, you know, final as far as the shots on goal go. What do we have here? So again, 36 shots against. They can't help it, right? So they're outshot 36-28. Even when they win, they're outshot 36-28.
But their record was pretty good last year, getting outshot, was it not?
Well, for the first
that's
yeah,
part of the
roof fell in. But I just thought it wasn't a hugely strong defensive game on either side. So I mean, I didn't even really think the other guys had a bit more physicality. I didn't notice Cody Franzen.
Yes,
I don't know. I mean, it was a funny game that I noticed weak goaltending by the Islanders. I noticed the play going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth all the time. And that was really it.
But let's be honest, when we look at this Islander team, and great start out of the gate, and everybody is raving about Gar Snow, you know, getting Nick Leddy, Johnny Boychuk into the lineup. But you look at that defense, and you're talking about, well, this team, do they play defense? Is it a better defensive-minded team? They've got good young players up front, and you add Leddy and Boychuk, I think, will add to their offensive players, but... at the end of the day, it's how well do you play without the puck? And I watch that Islander team, and it's like, wow, you know, am I changing my mind after their real good start based on what I watched tonight defensively?
Exactly. The one game again tonight defensively. And by the way, the Islanders had 1-0 and 2-1 leads, and Nick Leddy scored 2:48 into the game to give them the 1-0 lead, and that's where we really noticed him jumping in and being the extra guy, and Santarelli got kind of mixed up about that. So it created an odd man situation in Leafs zone. And, you know, that's what you want to see, whether it's Jake Gardner or the offensive D on the Leafs also do. So we saw the value there. But you're right, after that, it was, you know, it was a sloppy defensive game. But then in the second period when Halak just, it was like that game against the Rangers when Lundqvist was off his game and everything they fired just went in. You kind of went through that kind of period. So when it's 5-2 in the third, it really changes the dynamics of the game.
Yeah, you know what? And another thing that really did jump out for me was there was a lot of Johnny Boychuk shots that missed the net.
Yeah.
And so there's a guy who we know can tee it up And at the end of the day, he missed the net a lot. Had he hit the net in that second period, or maybe it was the first period where it really jumped out at me. I think the first period, there was a lot more. It could have been more than a 2-1 lead for the Islanders. But
well, the power play disparity, I mean, 3 penalties to 1. Joffrey Lupo taking 2 of those in the first period. So the Islanders had 3 power plays to 1 for the Leafs. Leafs didn't score in the power play, and the Islanders have a brutal penalty killing record. Anyway, Leafs didn't take advantage of it. But you mentioned Johnny Boychuk on that power play. Tavares did score on a power play, but you're right. It was funny because like the game was when it looked like the Islanders seemed to have control, they dominated a power play and didn't get a shot on goal. Like you said, they dominated it. They kept wiring shot after shot. Puck again looked like it was bad. Looked like a lacrosse ball, that particular power play, for some reason, and they couldn't get a good shot, good scoring chance.
No, you know what? No, at times I thought they were dominating, but the Leafs, I felt, did a pretty good job in keeping them to the outside.
I just
outside.
Meant that particular power play.
Okay,
yeah.
One power play. But the other times, and you mentioned the Leafs got in the hole by having to kill a lot of penalties, but I think we like what we've seen out of Winnick and Komarov as far as, you know, a unit that can kill penalties. And you throw JVR out there, and JVR, much like the Islander counterpart of Franz Nielsen, who scored 7 shorthanded goals last season, could add a little bit of that. Oh, by the way, be aware that JVR is on the ice killing penalties. You got to know that he's on the ice. Could he can come back and maybe take advantage of that?
Okay, so here's what we're going to do. Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne, Leafs Nation postgame on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're chatting some more. It's not like we're going to break or do anything revolutionary, but...
Well, I'm getting ready to get off my stop, by the way. My stop is getting ready. I'm so...
You probably
got anything else you want to ask?
This is one of those. The game's been so exciting, we've gone right by it, but... Okay, what I'm curious, and we're looking at it for the first time, when they're 7D, what kind of ice time do they get? Interestingly, Roman Polak had the most ice, 22 minutes, 46 seconds, then Phaneuf at 22:10. Okay, Franzen, 17:04, Robida, 15:44, Riley, 14:41, that's the least, Percy, 13:29, that's the least, Gardner, 14:40. So the three kids got the least ice time. I'm not saying that they deserved it or didn't deserve it, but it...
But you noticed that the young kids got the least amount of ice time.
That's just what I said a second ago, yeah.
Good job. Good job by you.
Yeah, Polak, 22 minutes. I mean, nine more minutes. He got 9 more minutes than Stuart Pearson.
Well, because figure this out, Gord. I mean, you got Polak, Robida, and Franzen as right-shooting defensemen who all played right D, and you spotted Riley, Gardner, and... Stuart Percy as left-handed D. Dion got a regular shift.
Yeah, Dion got a regular
whatever,
shift.
Right?
The other,
so that's how that all breaks down. If you wanted to, know the insight into some of that stuff.
Do you think any of their parents will phone and complain, like a minor hockey parents?
No, but their agents might. So get me out of here. No.
So anyway, that was the... That was the dealio that way.
What other nuggets did he have for us that really jumps out?
Okay,
at
well,
you?
Let's okay, but no, let's talk.
Everybody about, was plus tonight.
Okay, yeah, talk about the 7D. I'm just saying, to me, God rest his soul, Wade Bielak was a guy that, you know, sometimes you have a swing enforcer that can play forward or defense, right? A physical guy that you can use whatever. I mean, I just, or if you have Brent Burns or Dustin Byfuglien or someone that you use on power plays, you use as a forward or whatever. I really, at this time of the year, don't know why you're not trying your fourth line out, why you're not dressing Matt Fratton. You acquired him back. You traded to get him back to Toronto. So you feel there's something he can offer to the team.
I don't know, Gord. I'm not one of the coaches sitting there with my pad or drawing straws and saying, here's my vote for who should not play tonight, and here's what I think we should do. And so they tried this tonight, you know, against a good skating Islander forward team, and maybe they felt that having that extra D on the back end for whatever reason was going to prove to be a positive thing. So you should look at this as saying, great job, coaches. What a great decision. You come away in Long Island going against the Metropolitan first team in their division, and you go in there and you score 5 goals and you win the game.
I still think Patrick Why are Division.
You
okay, tell me the
Metropolitan.
Last. Tell me the last great team with 7D that played 11-7.
I don't know. I don't think there's ever been a great
Take
team.
Take your time. You've got 90 more minutes. Take your time.
There's never been
there
a great team.
There you go.
So
it's not the ideal. It's not the ideal setup, correct?
Although, do I get a chance to go through my...
we'll do it for another
day.
Do
a little investigating?
I'm totally curious. I'm really, you know, I'd like to hear responses that back up that discussion.
I will. Stay tuned, okay?
We'll try to get... And Richard Ponick did have a breakaway late. He played 7 minutes, 20 seconds. So... Who were the extra guys? Who was the other extra guy?
Well, it was Peter Holland. Peter Holland was the other extra guy who gets a little bit of PK time.
11:42.
He gets out there to, you know, you get to spot him a little bit here and there.
Well,
right?
Faceoffs, so, too, 6-3. And you're seeing now that in Kadri's case, how do you do on faceoffs today? He was 5-6, so not as horrible. But he had a couple of tough games. And you notice that Randy Carlisle wasn't afraid to slide, say, a guy like Peter Holland just out there for the faceoff and then get him to come off. So that gives him a bit more ice time along with killing penalties.
Yeah, you know what? And he has a lot of confidence on either Komarov or Winnick, which I sometimes looked at that and say, you know, the one PK lost it cleanly where the Islanders did get a great chance in the first period. And I remember when Pat Burns used to always make sure you had either Peter Zezel and or Doug Gilmore out together. You'd had two centermen out there in case one guy got thrown out to make sure you win that draw. That's so important.
Yeah.
Right?
Now, you look, and well, later on we'll go over the scoring and update it that way. We'll, of course, look at the out-of-town scores and all that as well. But, you know, it's interesting. When you look at the goals tonight, how they were scored. So James Van Riemsdyk gets the first Leaf goal.
Well, lucky bounce.
They
took advantage of a good bounce, right?
Then, as we said, Roman Pollock was the guy totally out of position. And look, Ma, what I found, a puck in the slot in front of the net. And again, there was a bad clearing by the Islanders there. But, Pollock being in the wrong position.
That was the 3-2 goal, by the way.
That was 3-2 goal.
Right?
Kessel's, what was his first like? Let's see, from Komarov and Santarelli.
Well, that was a nice play by, if you remember, Santarelli through the neutral zone, kind of waited and waited and chipped it back, and then they threw it over to Kessel on the far side. How can you forget his first goal? I mean, it was typical Phil Kessel, moving his feet, top of the circle, far side,
but his second goal is the one you predicted and just have talked
about. But that was dumped out JVR, and he just raced, beat the Islander defenseman.
But same thing, he wired two good shots, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, there was nothing like that overtime goal against
Colorado.
You don't
remember those two good shots?
I do remember.
Okay, but they were two good shots.
I'm saying, so it's not like the overtime goal against Colorado where it was the dipsy doodle fancy play. And then, you know, David Clarkson, so he gets the second goal of the year. And to me, that was the one that really showed Halak wasn't square, wasn't set at all. And
through a screen, you know, give him credit, just get it to the front.
But he wasn't
of the net.
Set. And Clarkson just had it the blue line.
He wasn't ready all night.
Yeah, just kind of, and did it when just, because he always seems to fire innocent shots from far away. You know, as much as I've appreciated David Clarkson's work ethic and contribution this season, it's like when he comes down, it's not like Kessel or JVR or somebody wiring that puck. I mean, he almost does the wrist shot to the body of the goaltender. But this one, there was traffic. It was unexpected, and it just, lo and behold, it was a bit like a kind of like a change-up pitch, and it went in.
But, you know, one of the things, and why I decided to say, you know what, I bet you Dave Clarkson scores again tonight. He scored his first goal of the season in New York. We had Dave Maloney, the Ranger, broadcaster, on after the game and asked him about, you know, what did you see in David Clarkson during his years in New Jersey? So then I put two and two together.
Boy,
and I
thought,
brilliant. You know what?
You're smart, huh?
It feels like he's closer to New Jersey and maybe he'll get that good vibe, right? Playing in that division.
So what
and
did
sure
you,
enough. So
what did you get in high school geography?
By the way, I like geography. Well, I was a pretty good student. I got over 90 in geography.
There you go. You got it all.
I love coloring
out
those rivers and trees.
Well, he filled the net, one little puck in the net.
Hey, did you not want to go back and give that scoop or that stat about the second period, the last time the Leafs scored?
I'm just going to give it now.
Oh, okay.
Holy mackerel.
Okay, well,
you want a spotlight for yourself?
It's taking you 15 minutes to get to them.
Because you want to talk about your great predictions tonight here. Sorry. I mean, we can get a band or something like that. Okay. So after that, investigative reporter Gord Stellick said a stat comes out. Last time the Leafs scored four goals in one period on Long Island was October 26, 1988, which I refer to as the glory year when I was general manager. I'm the only one that refers to it. But I remember all those games. I remember an 8-3-1 start in the first 12 games. And then, unfortunately, we had to play 68 more games. That was the problem. But anyway, I remember winning on Long Island. So when I saw that stat, I said, yeah, I remember that game. I didn't remember. We scored a lot of goals. Didn't know we got 4-1 period. But I remembered Mark Osborne had a good game. Mm. So I emailed Steve Fellenbach, who does these stats at Sportsnet, digs this stuff up, and said, who were the goal scorers? I think Ozzie had and he comes back. Mark Osborne got 3 assists on those 4 goals.
Wow.
Look at you beaming there.
Yeah.
3 assists on those 4 goals. 2 goals by Eddie Olczyk. a goal by Vinny Domfus and a goal by Todd Gill. So you're probably assisted on Eddie O's and you're probably set up Todd.
Yeah, you know, probably on the power play. I was just went in the corner, threw it back to the point. Probably, but it
took a
again,
hit.
That was a great start for the Maple Leafs. It was a year that we could score some goals. And I remember Eddie Olczyk was my roommate and played with Gary Lehman 51 that year. And we were waiting for trade deadline. Said, I wonder if these, you know, this management team is going to get us a goalie for the playoffs. Okay. And do you remember that Sergio Momesso goal on Alan Bester outside the blue line?
Okay.
Do you remember that?
In my defense, I was gone that year. I did not get you a goalie. I traded Kenny Reagan away. Okay. So you had Jeff Reese. And I don't know. God. Maybe you were the backup. I don't know.
No, Alan Bester.
Yeah, God, yeah. Jeffrey Alan Bester.
It was Alan Bester who led that goal from.
So the two of them, together equal Ben Bishop's height. Mm. You know that?
That's I wonder Johnny Kordick pounded Alan Bester at the bar in Vancouver when he got mad at him. He just suckered Alan Bester out of nowhere. Okay, those were just. You know, hockey players can show their emotions, right? Even amongst a team,
yeah,
right?
That's right. Like, that's right. Yeah, there were a few little issues there. But anyway, it was a great night on Long Island then. I remember that fondly. And Leaf fans, fun night. And you know what? There's always a lot of fans down there locally, so it seemed like a decent number of Toronto fans down there to catch the game. Well, it's always tickets available on Long Island, that's for sure.
Did we get an attendance figure? Oh, just 11,400. On a Tuesday night when the baseball opens up.
Sounds like, and that's, you know, when you round it off to 400, it just sounds like you made up a figure. They should have gone 11,417 or something like that. So,
no,
yeah, not
4,
a big crowd.
408, Gord. There was eight.
Oh, they got 408. Yeah, okay, yeah. I couldn't see it. I was going by what I heard on my ears from you. Okay, speak a little more clearer.
But nonetheless, I mean, we come away and we say, okay, you know, positive. Back-to-back games that
Certainly.
We've played. And you set it up for tomorrow night. With this team going into Ottawa, who is resting, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, does Ottawa have the advantage sitting at home watching and waiting? Or, you know, are these guys going to be tired?
The other thing, they haven't played a bad road game yet. Is that correct? They have not played a bad road game. Do I right?
Yeah. They're 2-1 on the road.
But they've
played one good home game.
They got a 2-1-1 because they got the tie in Detroit. The point in Detroit. So you're
also they're basically undefeated on the road.
So 2-0-1, right? Yeah.
And what do we say after that game on Friday night at home? We say, you know what, the best thing for this team is to go out on the road.
That's it.
There you go.
I'll be back at the road tomorrow against the Ottawa Senators. We'll be back on the airwaves then. But we got a whole lot coming up. A big night tonight on Long Island, the Toronto Maple Leafs 5-2 winners over the New York Islanders. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame with Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Swept around on the far side. Boniker back to the point. The shot deflects. Rebound. Holy mackerel. What a save by Bernier. He reaches back with the paddle of his stick and pulls it off the goal line.
Well, Joe Bowen with the call and Jonathan Bernier, one of his 34 saves tonight. The Islanders outshoot the Toronto Maple Leafs 36-28. Leafs beat the New York Islanders 5-2 as we welcome you back to Leafs Nation postgame. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Islanders media picked the three stars, Ozzy, Phil Kessel, James Van Riemsdyk, and Leo Komarov. I would have put Jonathan Bernier somewhere in that mix, would you?
Yeah, sure, he's in the mix.
He almost
got third star.
Okay, so first win of the season for Jonathan Bernier. Just to go over the scoring. We touched on a little bit earlier. The Islanders took the lead at the 2:48 mark. Nick Leddy from Ryan Strome and Josh Bailey, even strength goal. 8:44, James Van Riemsdyk is third from Phil Kessel. John Tavares on the power play. It was Joffrey Lupo in the penalty box. He scores his third of the year from Franz Nielsen. And it's a 2-1 Islander lead after one period of play. The Maple Leafs come back with four unanswered goals in the second period. And actually, the four goals are in a span of 8 minutes and 49 seconds. Bang, bang, bang. Bang, 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 bang. How about that? Phil Kessel, third of the year from Komarov and Santarelli, the 9:04 mark. Roman Pollock, his first of the year from Winnick and Santorelli at 11-11. David Clarkson, second of the year from Peter Holland and Robidoux at 16-21. And Kessel, as called by Mark Osborne, his fourth of the year from JVR and Tyler Bozak at 17-53. And that was it. No scoring in the third period, and it ends 5-2.
You know what happens on the road, Gord, when you get the visitors who pick the three stars? You know, they'll look and they say, wow, Leo Komarov, he gets his team-leading fifth assist, and he had four hits on the night and looked as though he was a force out there. There you go. He gets the third star. Isn't that sometimes how it works, do you think?
Beyond totally.
That's why he got the nod over Jonathan Bernier in the net.
So years ago... when I started and I was working part-time in the press box, and I'm talking like the late 1970s, early 1980s, and a guy named Stan Obodiak was the PR director, mm-hmm. and he was my neighbor. That was my break to get in there. So when the game wasn't on TV, which was very seldom, it was usually a Sunday night, right, that it wasn't on TV. So he got to pick the three stars. Stan did. He was a bit eccentric guy. And so we picked a first player before the game, me and my buddy Ken McMurtry. And we knew Stan would pick him as one of the three stars by the end of the game. We would say, like, Mark Osso. So all during the game, because Stan, he had an imperfect system. He'd put a little tick beside guys. So we would just decide, okay, Mark Osborne. So all game, we talk about Mark Osborne. And sure enough, when it came time, they'd phone with 2 minutes left.
Really? So what are you saying? The times that I did play and, you know.
You weren't there then.
Not really there.
Just about a star.
Wow.
Just about a lack of focus or what the three stars. Okay. It started because the gasoline brand was something. There was something caliber about three stars.
But you know what? Sometimes it's difficult, I think, in any given game to actually pick three stars. Is it not? I mean, you can pick the player of the game. And I've even had a hard time in the shortened part of this season to pick the Leaf player of the game at times.
Well, right? and goalies get picked. They tend to. So in not
that's why
picking,
they that's why they always won the Molson Cup, right?
Yeah, and not picking Bernier. You know, they seem to get selected a disproportionate amount of time. Defensemen also. It's a harder time getting picked. And now, Ozzie, you got so many guys going. I mean, it used to be the first line play 2.5 minutes, I think. Or I don't know. Guys were just out there all the time. So it was pretty obvious that way. But for the, you know, Maple Leafs, as I talked about it, the big line again, 2 goals, 1 assist by Phil Kessel. And I go, Joffrey Lupo wasn't on the big line, but despite his penalties early on, Phil Kessel, who seemed quite and was quite distracted by the Detroit Red Wings, both games, this weekend comes back with a real strong game and a strong game offensively.
And you know what? I would sometimes look at this game, and I think there's always teams that guys, you know, might play well against. You know, if we look at the way that Detroit defended Phil Kessel's line, you know, the previous two games, I mean, with Granwall and Erickson, they played them tough. Mm-hmm. If you look on the counterparts here tonight on the D end of things for the Islanders, like who would have played against those guys and who gave those guys any type of a hard time? That's why Phil's got a smile on his face after goal number one. When it's easy out there and it's a freewheeling type of game, which that's what it's going to be when you play the Islanders.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be trading chances. And from that perspective, the puck was bouncing a lot. And we look and say, it was a pretty entertaining game from that perspective, right? And yet, the offensive guys like Kessel love those type of games. Didn't Kadri, what did he do last year? Hat trick, right?
Yeah.
Those are his kind of games.
Yeah, yeah.
And surprising enough, even after today's article in the Star, you know, now he's kind of quiet, right?
Yeah. What was Randy Carlyle's comment?
He's very a confident individual.
That's a great line.
But how would you assess his play thus far this season?
He's a very confident individual. Yeah. Well, you know, getting Johnny Boychuk and Nick Leddy. I mean, those are two really great moves that incrementally improve the New York Islanders, and that's what you're trying to do when you make any move. But to keep perspective, just like, you know, for a lot of Leaf fans, getting Robidoux and Pollock on the offseason, so you get excited because you hope they're upgrades. But for the New York Islanders, nothing compares to having Denny Potvin out there 25 minutes a game. I mean, I just you know, there's still nobody close to that. And
no, you know what? And you look at, you know, perfect, especially Leddy, right? I mean, there's a guy who has won a Stanley Cup. I mean, you can see he's an effortless type of skater. And so you would think that he is just developing and coming into his own as a possible offensive D. So the fit with the Islanders and who they have up front would be a perfect addition for, you know, Nick Leddy. Now, Johnny Boychuk on the other end of things, and I've teased you about some of these things before, and in particular forwards, and I've given you this line, when a crusher thinks he's a rusher, soon he will be an usher. Okay, now Johnny Boychuk has given you know, he's got a bomb, right? But when he played for the Bruins, how did he play in Boston, really? You know, he had that big shot. He'd score some goals here and there. But his primary role on that team was what? As a defenseman. Was it to be the offensive guy on that team?
No.
Okay, so what's the answer? It would be to play well without the puck, have a little bee in your bonnet, get the heavy shot off the odd time, but that was left for, you know, Sedana Chara and Dougie Hamilton or whatever, right?
So
now he's going to the island, and now, what, 6 points through his first four games of the season? And I just sometimes look at that, and I'm a little bit worried that he's going to forget what brought him to being effective in the National Hockey League. And now he's on an offensive type of team. And yeah, he's got a bomb and probably will get double digits in goals, right? The way that he shoots the puck. And yet he may forget what brought him to the dance.
Well, it's two parts in both those guys. Well, it's one part for the same for both guys that I give Islanders credit about acquiring them. They're both positive additions, but keep in mind the other two teams that had them were willing to trade them. So, I mean, as much as you run into – when you run into cap problems like Boston and Chicago had
– that's why they were willing to trade
them. You don't trade guys that you know, that are your studs. So you don't. And that's not – that's three-quarters of your team. So these guys are upgrades for the Islanders. But as you say, if Johnny Boychuk all of a sudden thinks he's going to be P.K. Subban or something like that, now he's got a chance to grow and flourish and see if he can grow in his role. But you've got to play the other things, too. You've got to do the basics that he did as a, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 guy in Boston.
Okay, my mind is failing me here a little bit. You know, the New Jersey Devil defenseman that the Blackhawks acquired, you know, two seasons ago, is basically the guy who's taken Nick Leddy's position in Chicago, right? Because you got Seabrook, you've got Duncan Keith, you got Jarmuson, right?
Johnny Oduya.
There we go. So that's who took Nick Leddy's spot.
Thanks, Matt.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if financially...
I feel like I'm on Jeopardy here. You're throwing me questions all the time. So, Johnny Oduya. Yeah.
Well, because, you know, they looked at it and say, okay, we've got to relieve some cap space in Chicago, but also as a matter of the way you build your defense, too. I mean, you need defenders. Nick Leddy's a great skater and offensive guy, but at times, defensively is where he's a little bit weak, and Johnny Oduya is better defensively. So there you go. That's how Nick Leddy was expendable in Chicago, if you really want to get down to it.
Well, and you go back again at Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne. This is Leafs Nation postgame on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, the Toronto Maple Leafs 5-2 winners over the New York Islanders. And Ozzie, I mean, I'll go back to your 93 team in what eventually did, and give Floyd Smith and Cliff Fletcher both credit about Floyd Smith added Dave Ellett. Except it was at the expense of
I don't give him credit for that.
And Bob Rouse. And then Cliff added Jamie McCowan and Sylvain Lefebvre. So, I mean, all of a sudden, and you look at them mostly for defense. It wasn't any guy to add a lot of points, right? Ellett would be the one guy that it's, but the other three guys, the Leafs needed to get better defensive play. And, those types of guys did it more so than guys with the big shot.
Yeah, you know, and all fairness to Dave Ellett, I mean, you know, Roy is what his nickname was. I mean, he wasn't necessarily in an upper echelon offensive D. I mean, he was a little bit of both, right? I mean, he was a smart player, had a pretty good shot, could move the puck. And, you know, Pat Burns looked at, you know, our team on defense and say, okay, who else is going to play that type of role? I mean, Todd Gill evolved and had a little bit of offense in him, right? And so he jumped at it in the position, and, you know, Dmitry Mironov was the other guy, right-handed shooting defenseman that had some, you know, offensive upside. But it was basically, if we, you know, could have grabbed another offensive D, I'm sure they would have. But that's what we were stuck with, so to speak. But, you know, good guys to be stuck with.
Now, just do you have some finals yet? Can you refresh your thing with the Montreal Canadiens winning in overtime against Detroit? Wow. I mean, it's been exciting times in Montreal. Been a perfect season, so I'm just seeing that one. So let us know.
So you just want the final scores? Do you want
give the goal scores? So whatever games are finals right now.
Okay, Boston defeats San Jose 5-3, and for the Bruins, it was Brad Marchand with his first, Torrey Krug, with his second,
another D, right?
Seth Griffin with his first, Gregory Campbell with his first, and David Krejci with his second. For San Jose, was Logan Couture with his second, Joe Thornton with his second. Logan Couture had two that night, tonight with his third. Tuukka Rask back in the pipes as the winning goaltender. You don't have your computer screen on, so I will do all of the out-of-town finals, and I'll help you get yours going if you need to for the second half of this show. The Rangers in overtime defeat the New Jersey Devils. For the Rangers, Chris Kreider with his second, Chris Mueller with his first, Ricky Nash with his NHL-leading eighth goal.
Wow.
Late in the third period to tie the hockey game, and then Kevin Kline in overtime gets his first. For the Devils, Jaromir Jagr gets his first. How many is that for him? Is he over 700 yet? The answer is not yet.
Not yet.
Adam Henrique with his third, and John Merrill with his first. Henrik Lundqvist with the win. Corey Schneider takes the loss.
Here's my question. Now, have the Nash family had the baby yet? Did they?
Yes, and he feels really good that he's got eight goals on the season. Now, and that's how good he feels about being a dad.
And the other one of the finals you're about to read as well is Montreal winning in overtime. And as the Rangers win in overtime, I'm curious, and we'll ask our friend Steve Fellin at Sportsnet, who digs up all these stats at some point, because Saturday, four games went into overtime. Three were solved in overtime. Only one was a shootout. And, you know, one was unfortunately solved the wrong way resolved the wrong way against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I'm wondering just that thing about the long change. I do seem to think more games are being decided in overtime than shootouts.
No, it appears that way, and that's a real positive. And I didn't know that if you knew this, but in the American League, they're playing 4-on-4 for 4 minutes and then 3-on-3 for 3 minutes. When, you know, somebody went to Hamilton the other night about the Marley and Hamilton game that went into overtime and said, wow, that was fantastic. You know, the 3-on-3, whether that happens at the NHL level, you know, we're not sure yet. But as you mentioned, Gord, in overtime, the Montreal Canadiens defeat the Detroit Red Wings, and they go to what? What's their record now? Is it 6-1?
I think 12-1.
No, 6-1. But, you know, interesting enough, Henrik Zetterberg with his second in the second period. Galchenyuk with 3 minutes and 9 seconds left in the third period ties it for Montreal with his third of the season, and then David Desharnais with his first of the season in overtime. At the 56-second mark.
You know, another one is, as I talk about overtime, and I make these brilliant observations. So Alexander Galchenyuk, you know, it's like what the Leafs did with Morgan Rielly, that guys that came up and played as underage players after missing significant time with injuries in junior. I mean, Galchenyuk has last year only played about 6 games or so. So you thought for sure he was going to go back to junior, and he came up 2 years ago. And he hasn't looked a step out of beating Montreal. And Morgan Rielly, same thing. Had a significant injury, missed a lot of games, so you thought it was going to go back to Moose Jaw, and didn't. And, you know, in both these cases, so far the organizations are looking like they made the right decision. I just always thought when a guy's missed a whack of games, you kind of say, that's a no-brainer, send him back. But they didn't in either case.
Well, you know what? And for Galchenyuk, though, the only argument of that is he's a forward, okay? I think it's much easier to make the transition as an 18-year-old to play forward. What Morgan Rielly did last year,
as a
19-year-old defenseman was, you know, still a great thing to be able to do. But, you know, that's that offensive flair that, you know, players that have skill and can skate and just progress. I mean, that's just part of the art of, you know, scouting these players and also projecting how they can fit in your lineup.
But don't close that book yet, because also keep in mind what Buffalo took Grigorenko and they burned his year and he couldn't do it. He was a forward as well. They took him a little bit after Galchenyuk.
Well, and
Kampa chose to send Drew in back to junior, you know, rightly or wrongly. I mean, Stevie Y decided as a forward, send him back. But you are right about it's easier or it's...
But it becomes an organizational choice, and I think what you're seeing more and more is that teams are going to err on the side of caution with their young players, and I don't know if I can argue with that or disagree with that. I probably would do the same thing, or in the case of special players like what we saw last year, Nathan MacKinnon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, how can you argue that, oh, gee, he should have gone back to junior? Well, I don't think so. He was quite spectacular.
And it was even interesting, a guy like Seth Jones, who, you know, nobody argued about being there, but did come back to earth a little bit the second half of the season, because he was, when he was put in the top two defense pair, and he's a stud, he's a solid D, but then when he was put in the top two, it started to wear on him a bit, and they kind of started using him in the second pair after that. I'm not saying he should have played another year in junior. I'm not saying he shouldn't. I mean, at the end of it, you know, Nashville didn't have success, so you wonder. But
do you want to go back to that Alex Galchenyuk comment that you did make?
About how many games he missed?
Well, yeah, how many games he missed? Because believe it or not, how many games did we play in the shortened season? 48, right? He played all 48 games as a rookie.
Yes,
but it was last year that he...
No, junior. How many games did he miss his junior year? Sarnia.
Well, in Sarnia, yeah, he went back to junior that year, and he got hurt, right?
Well, yeah.
In the 2012-13 season. See, he was drafted in 2012. He went third overall. And so rather than...
How many games did he play that year in the 11-12 season?
In the 11-12 season, he played only two games. And so he was drafted while he was injured.
Exactly. Okay?
So it wasn't as though Montreal drafted him and then he went back to junior. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He was drafted by Montreal. Yes, he went to junior because it was a lockout season. And then he came right up and played all 48 games for the Canadiens. So,
And he was held. He played six playoff games on top of the two regular season games. Yeah. But, point well made. Point now.
I don't want you to, I don't want to get a caller calling in and saying, you guys got it wrong.
No, they won't. Okay. I guarantee you no caller will call in and say that tonight. Any more out-of-town scores? Finals?
There are a lot of out-of-town scores. There were, nine other games tonight. Gord.
Let's just give the finals right now.
But I think I've given you all the finals.
Okay.
If you're asking me for any more finals, I will have to say to you that I don't believe there are any finals right now.
We'll get them. We'll bring them up.
I gave you the three finals, including the Maple Leaf. There's a couple of games that... Well, put it this way. There's two that are both at the end of second period. Philadelphia-Chicago at the end of two. It's 3-0 for Chicago. Saad, Kane, and Brian Bickle. And in Dallas, how about this? At the end of the second period, looks like Willie Desjardins. The bubble is a little bit bursting there. 6-2 after two periods.
And that's where Willie Desjardins ran their team in Texas for 2 years. Talking about coaches and not, Willie Desjardins, not a great homecoming back.
He must have gone out the night before the game.
A lot of friends. Well, we'll find out. Randy Carlyle, I'm sure if they were staying over, would go out tonight, but they'll be heading to Ottawa. Here's a Toronto Maple Leaf head coach, would think pretty happy after tonight's 5-2 win over the New York Islanders. We'll hear from Randy in 1 second. He's just stepping up to the microphone here, and we'll get him in a second to chat about that, find out what gives. But 5-2 win, and trying to think what is it was interesting, his points. Nowadays there's so many cameras, and the one goal by Letty, it showed him talking to Santarelli, right, about because Santarelli went to the wrong guy on that particular play.
Well, because it's all about back pressure, right? I mean, he back-checked in over across this blue line, but he forgot that, you got to pick up the D coming late, which Letty was, and ends up pucking the back of your net.
Okay, here he is, Toronto Maple Leaf head coach Randy Carlyle.
The history of the early history of the season with their hockey club, they really come at you in the early going, and they did that again tonight, and we weathered a storm. They score the first goal, we get it back. They score the second goal, we get it back. And we kind of got our things going our way in the second period. And then we finally decide that we're going to control the puck in the offensive zone a little bit more. And we were rewarded for that, and obviously our goaltender in the third period was called upon. We stopped playing, we just started watching and moving the puck, and they came at us and pushed the walls, but we got it done, and now we move on.
I'm in on Phil's game today.
Well, again, special player, finds ways to score those goals and difficult angles, big time shot, posting in, those are our goals that goal scorer score.
Do you need that Clarkson line to chip in offensively like they did tonight? Do you need that to continue?
Well, we'd like every line, and obviously with their line, they are starting to get more of a reward for the work that they put in. If they continue to play in the opposition zone and cycle a puck and get pucks to the net the way they did tonight, and they have in the previous games, goals will come.
Blocker side on Halak, is that something that you guys had highlighted in the film study?
No, we never let our secrets out to the world.
Dion seems to want to fight.
I think it was better judgment for the Clutterbuck situation. He's an aggressive player. He's out there being physical, and in those situations, I'd rather see Dion turn the other cheek.
You talk about the seven defensemen you went with tonight and what that might mean for tomorrow.
Well, we went with 7D based upon that. We thought that we were going to bring Percy back in the lineup. We didn't want him sitting. And we looked at our fourth line, and we felt that we were fresh enough that we could rotate our right wingers through, or people through, and give our fourth line or our grouping on the bottom some skill to play with. And, you know, we've done that last year, and teams have done it historically. I don't know if we'll do it tomorrow night or not.
Did you like what you see, saw from Holland and Ponick?
Well, again, with Holly, it's we're trying to find an opportunity to try to find him some more ice time, and that's on the penalty killing. I thought he did a heck of a job for us. And with Ponick, he's strong down low, and if we can, you know, get them into a comfort zone, they can earn and play more minutes for us. And the key is to find the right combination of players in that grouping, and that you can feel safe putting them over the boards.
That is Randy Carlyle, head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And, you know, based on what he said about the 7D, okay, so he said that we feel that, you know, we couldn't keep Percy out again mm-hmm. and justify maybe pulling out another D, and we could maybe get away with less forwards and, you know, spotting a guy like Kessel, okay? So Sunday was a day off. You practiced yesterday. You play tonight. Your horses should be able to go back to back.
It's still
right?
early in ride the season. Haven't been traveling extensively. There you go. So there we go. We'll see what they ride tomorrow night in Ottawa. We'll ride over Long Island way, talk to Arthur Staple from Newsday about the Islanders' performance tonight. It was a 5-2 win for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the New York Islanders. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame with Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand.
Santarelli dropping first. The Leafs on the shot. Scores! Kessel off the right wing. He was exchanged. As Clarkson came off, Kessel came on, and Leo Komarov makes a great pass to give the Leafs a tie.
Well, Joe Bowen, our good friends, had better goal calls along the way, but he rallied at the end there, trying to figure it out. Phil Kessel, he wired a couple of shots. That was the one that made it 2-2. Tied it up. The Maple Leafs never looked back. They had a 5-2 win over the New York Islanders tonight as we welcome you back to Leafs Nation. Postgame, Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And to talk about the New York Islanders, who've, despite tonight's loss, have been one of the pleasant surprises, our friend Arthur Staple from Newsday joining us. How you doing, Arthur?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Good. You know, trying to figure out the game from a Leaf point of view, it was we were just looking kind of fire wagon hockey, kind of sloppy in a lot of ways, not a lot of great defense, not great goaltending, I guess. Would that be the big difference for the Islanders? I mean, how did you see the game tonight?
I think just that kind of 8 or 9 minute stretch in the second period, the Islanders, you know, they fell apart. The goaltending, you know, to not even get a piece of any of those for Halak was definitely his low point. He's been here so far this year. And in their own zone, they looked a lot like they did last year and in years gone by, where they just let a lot of people, you know, you saw Roman Polak kind of walk through the slot untouched, and Clarkson was able to circle around on the fourth goal. So yeah, they you know, there were a lot of breakdowns. They played soft. I think they felt you know, they felt like in the room it just sounded like they were a little fed up with themselves. You know, playing an all too familiar scenario where they just give up goals in bunches.
Arthur, great start of the season for the Islanders, 4-1 heading into tonight's game, and obviously everybody has talked about the great start, the addition of Nick Leddy. Johnny Boychuk, you know, both offensive guys or have been that thus far in the early going. But even as you add offensive defensemen, can this team, I know they can score and those are positive moves, but can they, you know, defend and at least appear to get to that, you know, the final eight in the Eastern Conference based on what you've seen thus far?
Well, I mean, you know, they gave up 3 goals in each of the 4 wins, which is not really how you win NHL games in 2014. You know, it's definitely maybe too much of a throwback to the good old days of just making sure you outscore your opponent. They knew they had to tighten up defensively. And a couple of those, you know, there was a couple of garbage time goals when they won the opener in Carolina. But still, it's, you know, 3 is too many to give up on a regular basis. And I think, you know, that obviously Leddy and Boychuk were big additions, and they certainly provided tons of offense, especially on the power play. And they've been pretty steady 5-on-5 as well. I think, you know, the ironic thing is maybe their one of their better 5-on-5 games was the one in Pittsburgh that they lost. And they were pretty okay. You know, they were okay in their own zone. It was really when they got on the power play that Pittsburgh gutted them. So, you know, tonight I think was much more breakdowns. And I think, you know, Luba Vishnovsky was probably ready to come back tonight. They held him out for one more game. I'm pretty sure you'll see him come back in when the Islanders go out on Thursday up in Boston. And that should probably slot guys where they're supposed to be. Calvin DeHaan could pair back up with Travis Hamonic. Vishnovsky probably with Thomas Hickey if he's okay from the skate cut he got in the third period tonight. But, you know, they were trying to put guys maybe in places, guys like Brian Strait and earlier Griffin Beinhart that maybe weren't quite ready for those kinds of roles. And I think if they've got their full complement of defense healthy and ready to go, they'll be a little bit, you know, they'll be able to see what they can get. Just better play in their own zone, better transitions, and a little less soft, I guess.
Yeah, I mentioned Thomas Hickey. It's one of those scary things with the skate coming up, catching him, and with the way where the Islander dressing room is located, you basically had to stop play and get him off in a hurry. So we didn't hear anything more here in the game. Any initial reports you got, Arthur?
I asked one of the staffers how many stitches he got, and the response was too many to count. So it was a bad one, right? You know, kind of right from the bottom of his mouth down to his chin. We'll have to see what happens. You know, he's a pretty tough guy. He played all 82 last year, and that's a big ask for a tiny guy like him on defense. He gets bounced around a lot. So, you know, we'll have to see if the space is healed up enough to be able to go on Thursday. But as I said, Luba Vishnovsky's ready to go. So they can at least, you know, their depth, it's definitely a sign of their depth being so much better than it's been in years past, where they can actually put guys who have had experience in when someone goes down. But there's no word right after the game. We'll have to see what happens to them.
Arthur, Ryan Strome of note, Mississauga-born Islander first-round pick in 2011, 37 games last year. Looks like he's here to stay for the Islanders. His sixth assist, he picks up one assist tonight. He's got six on the season, second only John Tavares on the Islanders. You got to like what you've seen out of this kid early this season, have you?
Yeah, and I think his game has gotten a little more forceful, you know, as games have gone on. He, you know, he was picking up points those first couple games, but his 5-on-5 play was kind of lacking. You know, it's a bit of a transition to go from being a natural center to playing on the wing. When they had Mikhail Grabowski was on the line with him and Brock Nelson, that line was going pretty well. Grabowski out with a concussion, and Strome and Nelson struggled since Grabowski's been out. They split him up tonight. Strome was pretty good with Franz Nielsen, who's a very responsible center, a good two-way guy, and I think that's what Strome needs to be able to thrive, where he knows he can be creative and maybe take a chance that he's got people back covering for him. So, I think they've seen some improvement. He had more chances to score a goal tonight than he had, I think, in the first few games. But they definitely like what they see. You know, he was a bit on the bubble when camp was about midway through. They were not too thrilled with his effort. I think he just sort of simplified things, got a little bit more positive attitude, and he really worked his butt off to be able to earn that spot on opening night. And, I think he's here to stay.
Arthur Staple of Newsday joining Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne on Leafs Nation postgame on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Leafs 5-2 winners over the New York Islanders. And I know the World Series on tonight and weekday crowd, they said about a little bit over 11,000. That I'm trying to remember teams that, you know, teams have made moves like from Hartford to Raleigh, North Carolina, Minnesota to Dallas, that kind of thing. And it's a bit of a different animal here that you've got Long Island and then moving to Brooklyn. And I'm curious the dynamic in the crowd this year. Now they've had a pretty good start. That probably helps things. And then what seems to be the sense about people's next year, whether they move on as fans, do they follow them and not go to games? Are they just pissed off? I mean, what's the sense there?
I think you can say all of the above, perhaps, to that one. It's definitely a range of emotions for these fans out here. You know, it's been two decades of them getting battered around, basically. Different owners, con men trying to step in and buy the team. Charles Wong stepping in, buying the team, trying to get the new arena, failing, really reducing the salary. You know, trying to rebuild with young guys and thinner rosters. In the last decade, they're really down to the most hardcore of the hardcore fans from the heyday of the team. So I think those are people that are going to follow them, especially if they're good. You know, that's a group of people. Maybe you lose a few of the people that live way, way out on Long Island, where the Coliseum is a little bit more convenient than it is to get to Brooklyn. But I think maybe you then pick up people who work in the city who live on Long Island who couldn't normally come out to games because the traffic is so bad to get here by 7. They'll be able to just go to a game and, you know, in downtown Brooklyn, take the subway there, and then take the train back home. So, you know, I think that part will even out. And I think the novelty factor, it's, you know, Brooklyn is a thriving place. It's, you know, arguably a hotter ticket real estate-wise than Manhattan and some of those areas nearby to the Barclays Center. So I think there's some excitement about that and maybe getting a new breed of fan in there, especially if they go in with some momentum. Being a good team this season will definitely have a big impact. And I think it'll have a big impact on the fans here just to be able to send the old barn out on a good note and maybe get some playoff games in there where, you know, I think anybody who was ever around the, you know, 2 years ago when they played the Penguins or way, way back in the old days, there's no louder building in the league than this one when it's full and people are going crazy in the playoffs. So, yeah, you know, winning would go, this season would go a long way towards setting themselves up nicely for next season in Brooklyn.
Arthur, a couple of former Leafs of note, Grabowski and Kuhlman, they gave Randy Carlyle the Ice Bucket Challenge this summer as part of the ALS, you know, thing. And Grabo's out with a bit of a concussion. But Nick Kuhlman, I mean, 17 and a half minutes of ice time tonight. It wasn't really that noticeable. I mean, a hardworking yeoman type of player here during his days as a Toronto Maple Leaf. What's been the transition for Nick Kuhlman there on the island? How has he fit in with the group there?
I think he fits in pretty well. You know, his regular spot the first few games when they were at full strength among their forwards was playing on the left side with Franz Nielsen. And I think, you know, having that those two guys be kind of two-thirds of your checking line, you know, I think talking to Nielsen, talking to John Tavares, I think they were all really impressed with Kuhlman's ability to kind of stay with it defensively. He's a very tenacious guy with and without the puck. He's a big, thick guy. You know, he moved up to play with Tavares in the third period tonight. I think that was just kind of a random assignment. But, you know, he doesn't really have the touch, I think, offensively, which I'm sure Leafs fans are well aware of from this one year of 30 goals. But I think he can provide a little bit of offense back from that third line, and he's a guy who can cycle puck down low and hit people and kill penalties. And I think these are things that the Islanders have been challenged to do over the years, have guys like that who are just good, reliable role players. And, you know, you throw out contract numbers because, you know, people do complain about them. But to my mind, it's not my money, and the Islanders need, they're in a position where they need to overpay for decent players, and they did that with them. So, you know, I think he fits the role. And Grabowski was going really well as more of an offensive-style player, playing on the wing, not at center, with the two young guys, Brock Nelson and Ryan Strome, and they produced some offense. They've been doing some good things at even strength before Grabowski got injured. It seems like he skated this morning, so it seems like it won't be a very long-term thing, which, you know, knock on wood, it's a big deal with the concussion. So if he's back within a couple of games, I think they'll be happy to be able to put their forwards right where they want them. And hit Grabowski being a wing on a more offensive-style second line, cool him in on the wing on a more checking style third line. So, you know, they've added to their depth, which, as you said, it's certainly been lacking in recent years. And to be able to provide some scoring from someone other than Tavares has, you know, was a big reason for the 4-win start of the season.
Arthur, thanks very much. Appreciate your time as always.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Arthur Staple from Newsday covers the New York Islanders and the National Hockey League for that paper. We're losing him a little bit there at the end, but just we talked to Arthur many times, and it does seem as well that the new ownership was officially approved 3 days before the additions of Boychuk and Letty, and Charles Wong will still be the power guy for 2 years, they say, but obviously a positive add with the new ownership in place.
Well, it looks positive so far, and I think for a players, you know, that are there in Long Island, you know, I think players do know what it's like to play for an organization where things aren't very stable, and they can feel it. And, you know, thank goodness in many respects for guys like Johnny Tavares that are, I think, are committed there for the long haul.
I was surprised.
Right?
You know, and actually it's a bargain right now. He's, you know,
yeah. Yeah, you know, and then some of those other players, you know, like Kyle Opozo, you know, Franz Nielsen, you know, hopefully when Michael Grabner gets back. So the whole move, the ownership change, bringing in Leddy and Boychuk, Halak and net. Those are all positive things to hopefully revitalize a once pretty proud organization back in the in their heyday in the 80s.
Well, we'll take a look at it. So just so Johnny Tavares, $6 million a year, is that's the hit he's taking. You're talking about next year, Kane and Taves, or that's the cap hit, $6 million a year.
That's what we'll be signing Kadri for, right? I mean,
yeah.
He'll be getting that kind of money, right, if you read
Kane
the paper today.
Yeah, Kane and Taves will make $10.5 million a year starting next year, and Tavares, a very friendly $6 million a year. So that's a bargain. That's right, 5.5 is the cap hit, so $5 million difference. How about that, Ozzy?
Yeah.
Okay, let's hear from Jonathan Bernier. First win of the season for the Leaf netminder.
They came out really hard. They were banging. They tried anything. So, but I liked our focus. We came out in the second, and even if we got hit quite a bit in the first, we stuck with it, and we scored some big goals.
Robbed a Kuhlman, another good one on Cizikas. What did you see on the Cizikas shot as he had the entire empty side?
Which one was that? Sorry.
You know, the sprawling glove save? You were on your stomach?
Yeah, on my stomach. I don't know. It's just, I guess you just try to react, right? And sometimes I thought they had a few lucky bounces tonight that came right on their stick, and especially that second goal. And I was trying just to be there in position and let that puck hit me.
When Phil's on fire like that, you almost feel sorry for the other goalie because he's got to know the shots are coming and he just can't do anything about it.
Yeah, I'm sure Yaro was a good goalie, and you know, some nights are not going your way. And I thought Phil was really strong in those two goals. He can shoot it, that's for sure.
So can Johnny Boychuk. What's it like back there when he winds up with all the time and space?
Yeah, he's, you know, he likes to shoot too. He's got a great shot. He likes to shoot, and I think they just want to give him the puck and crash the net. So that was our big thing on our PK, just kind of try to take him away as much as possible.
You feeling good about your own performance tonight?
Yeah, I thought I felt pretty good. I think team-wise, we did some good things, and I just think we in the third we sat back a little bit too much, but. Those are things that we got to learn as a group to keep pressuring the other team.
So, what do you try to take away from starts this early in the season?
Take away?
Yeah, like personally, like when it's this early, like are the things you're trying to feel out?
I think to me it's just seeing that puck. Like I find like when you come from the summer and big training camp and stuff like that, it's just hard to find the puck all the time, right, with bodies in front. And I think that's just the one thing I really focus on before games. It's just to always have an eye on the puck, and if you do, you got a pretty good chance to stop it. And there's a couple times tonight that I couldn't find and they missed the net, so those are the one that you're kind of happy about, right?
Right. So does that get better as the year wears on? Like you just kind of
I think you kind of find a way to, you know, being better at it, I guess, and that's just, you know, you can't really work on those in practice. You're going to try to do drills where, you know, the guy's going to stay in front and tip shot, but it's not the same when you have like 10 guys just skating in front of you, right?
Well, Jonathan Bernier, quite a night for him. First win of the season stopped. 34 of 36 shots that went his way in the 5-2 Toronto Maple Leaf win. Ozzy, out-of-town scores, a lot of other games going on. I'll turn it over to you because you got the only computer working right now.
Yeah, you know what? I gave you three other out-of-town scores that are final and one just in out of Winnipeg. The Winnipeg Jets defeat the Carolina Hurricanes 3-1. For Winnipeg, Andrew Ladd with his first, Adam Lowry with his first, Dustin Byfuglien gets his second, and Yuri Talusti on the power play replied for the Carolina Hurricanes, who are winless score. That's 0-2 or 0-3-2 now. They are on the season. Winnipeg goes to 2-4. Just heading into overtime in Nashville, Arizona, and the Predators are tied at 3. In Chicago, with 17 minutes left in the third period, it's the Blackhawks leading the Philadelphia Flyers 3-0. 13 minutes left in the third period, Dallas holds a 6-2 lead on Vancouver. 1:54 left in the second. Colorado and Florida are tied at 3. Jerome McGinley gets his first for Colorado. And at the end of the second period in Calgary, Tampa Bay and Calgary are scoreless.
And reminder, those three finals, again, you talked about earlier on, we just said a few minutes ago, including Montreal winning in overtime against Detroit, just those scores.
Yeah, you know what? Boston beat San Jose 5-3. It was the Rangers in overtime, 4-3 in New Jersey. Montreal, as you did mention, David Desharnais in overtime defeats the Red Wings 2-1. And those are the out-of-town scoreboards up to date.
Very nice, very nice. We will come back. Lance Hornby's going to join us as well. The we want to touch on Randy Carlyle's line as they get set for the Ottawa Senators tomorrow. The rationale behind using, and again, the 7D. I like to talk, but what can you say? Phil Kessel, 2 goals, 1 assist. I mean, he did what he's supposed to do. A number of different guys that way. And, you know, look at that. But also, he went with 7D, wanted to get Stuart Percy back in the lineup and felt, as we said, that justified, they are rested. But you go to four, I mean, I would go to four lines tomorrow. I would. I would pull somebody out and go to four lines, get Matt Fratton in, whatever it may be, on the second game of the back-to-back, especially when it wasn't really a great, you know, strong game by the D in a lot of ways, 36 shots against Bernier. It was a pretty kind of loosey-goosey game. What would you do, or would you stick with the winning recipe?
Well, I'd probably be tempted to stick with the winning recipe, and Randy justified it by saying he could not or did not want Stuart Percy to sit out another game. And so if you go back to tomorrow night, who's your healthy D that you're going to scratch? You know, Polak, you know, do you, he scored a goal tonight. He's abrasive. You know, Cody France and Phaneuf. I mean, is it Stefan Robida? Is that the guy you're going to sit out again as a veteran guy? And yet, you know, from a veteran perspective and from Randy's perspective, I mean, he's counting on his leadership. And, you know, one of the things I think you need are your older players to be playing. I mean, that's why you sign a guy for 3 years at 37 years old.
Mark Hunter named the new director of player personnel. Yep. That's another connection to Brendan Shanahan's days in London.
Yeah, you know what? It was, I believe, the Hunters who decided to retire Brendan's jersey a number of years ago. It may have been as long as about 8 or 9 years ago. I think they had that ceremony in London. And, you know, Brendan, I think, has been doing his due diligence, you know, over the course of, you know, time here on the job with, you know, some of the hires he did with Kyle Dubas, you know, up-and-coming young type of GMs. And, you know, to add to the mix of, you know, you've added some analytical people to your group when you let go of Dave Poulin and Claude Loiselle. And, you know, interesting hire of Mark Hunter, right, with director of player personnel, who's done a tremendous job. And Mark Hunter's reputation for the London Knights has been a guy who evaluates talent. Loves to go watch hockey games, spend a lot of nights watching 15-year-olds. And now that his kids are older, it's an interesting and probably a fantastic hire because of the wonderful job him and his brother have done in London.
Well, I think in a lot of ways, he takes Dave Poulin's spot. You know, just as you say, because Loiselle was more the capologist, whatever.
And but Davey Poulin also looked after the Marlies, you know. So
yeah.
I still don't, you know, like who's looking after the Marlies?
Well, they got enough guys. Well, Dave Nonis, I don't know. They got enough guys.
No, who's looking after the Marlies? At least whenever the call came down, you know, whose decision was it to get called up from the Marlies? It was Dave Poulin. He had his hand on the pulse with the Marlies.
Yeah, but you can just call the coach and call a guy up. It's not that big a problem. You don't have to say, like, hold on. Anyway, Kyle Dubas apparently is technically overseeing the Marlies now. I hear what you're saying, okay? You seem defeated when I...
No, I'm not defeated. I'm just, you know, in that type of structure, it was pretty clearly defined, which I think is important in an organization. You know, yeah, you know, you've brought, you know, Dubas in and given him... Yeah, I mean, he's basically learning on the job, right? As a young.
I would think so. Yeah,
you know, GM.
Well,
at this level,
we will find out more about the young assistant GM of the Marlies, I guess. But we'll chat with our man Lance Hornby when we come back, and we'll talk one more about joy for Leaf fans. There seem to be many Leaf fans in Long Island tonight, and they defeat the New York Islanders 5-2. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame with Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand.
The Maple Leafs score 4 unanswered goals in the second period. Phil Kessel moves past both Bill Derlego in goal scoring and Dick Duff in points as a Maple Leaf with two goals and one assist. Van Riemsdyk, Polak, and Clarkson have the other Toronto goals as the Maple Leafs will win this one by a score of 5-2.
Joe Bowen with the final call. Like he said, the Toronto Maple Leafs 5-2 winners over the New York Islanders. Welcoming you back to Leafs Nation. Postgame, Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. That's interesting company. Phil Kessel goes by Bill Derlego and Dick Duff among Leafs scorers in various categories. But the one I like to talk about, Ozzy, the one I did some digging for, is when I saw this was the first time the Toronto Maple Leafs had scored four goals in one period on Long Island since October 26, 1988. Got my Spidey senses up. That's when I was, brief time, I was GM of the Leafs. So I remember all our wins. That was a big one on Long Island. And I thought you had had a good game offensively. You couldn't remember. And our buddy Steve Fellin at Sportsnet, he does all the stat stuff, checked into it. And yes, that four-goal period, Mark Osborne had three assists. Goals were scored two by Eddie Olchuk, one by Vinny Downfus, one by Todd Gill. So we figure you probably helped on Eddie O's too, and then set Todd Gill up.
Yeah, you know what? You saw that second Phil Kessel goal where JVR just basically flipped the puck into the neutral zone and Phil just chased it down. I think it got it just inside the Islander blue line and snapped that shot. That was three of my assists in that same period. That's all I did, just flip the puck and let the guys go and get it.
Were you back at the bench already in all cases? They had to skate to the bench.
I may have been, but, you know, interesting enough. And I think I better, I'm going to toot my own horn a little bit here because this gives me an opportunity because you decided to bring this up. But, you know, when Zetterberg got the four assists on Friday night as a Red Wing here in Toronto, I said to you, I go, and that was, he tied a career high with those four assists. And I go, I kind of feel pretty good that I got five one night as a member of the Red Wings my rookie season. So more than
five
Zetterberg, me, of
game.
all people, me.
Who were you playing? Do you remember?
Playing the St. Louis Blues. So in my rookie season, which I led the Red Wing in scoring, believe it or not, miracles do happen.
Yeah.
Right after the U.S. won the Olympics in 1980, miracles continued to happen when I was a rookie in Detroit in 81, 82. But I had five assists one night against St. Louis, and my only NHL hat trick in my career was against Mike Liute of the St. Louis Blues in St. Louis.
That game or a different game? Must have been a different game.
It was a different game. Otherwise, that would have been 8-point night.
You'd be chasing Daryl Sittler's record. Okay. Well, how about, because I'm wondering how this works, and back when you played, guys got bonuses for points. You can't do that anymore. There's not the guys get compensated well enough anyway.
No, I know.
But it was getting ridiculous, some of the bonus plans that were in place. You were getting like $5,000 if you fell out of bed and showed up to practice. It was getting
ridiculous. Some of us needed to put those bonuses in because we couldn't convince our GM to give us a little five more on our salaries, which was my pet peeve back in 1988.
Well, I know, but then you hit some of your bonuses that year, I would think. Some of the rather generous bonuses.
Yeah, did I have a bonus for 50 points, 60?
I don't
65,
know. I think you had to make the playoffs anyway, which we didn't. But yeah. Did you ever get a guy back then, like you hear in kids hockey a lot, guys that would steal assists? Guys that would be proactive and skate to the referee and
I think there was phantom assists.
No, but would a guy actually say
steal?
Well, yeah, but just sort of suggest, right? Just kind
of. There was a lot of suggestions going on in the 80s, I think, guys coming back to the bench where I don't think they really could do the review, right?
No, they couldn't.
Goals. I mean, they weren't doing that. And
you could tell when the ref was confused. It was one referee generally, so.
Do you think Gretz got any phantom assists during his
I think he got
scoring prowess.
I don't think it. Do you think he chased them down? I don't think he chased them down.
99 may have gotten an assist on that.
He might have got a few phantom assists, but someone ever blatantly, like you knew you got the assist and somebody skated and got credit for it himself? You're not going to throw him under the bus, right?
No. I don't remember that. I don't remember that.
Okay.
But, I was going to give you a little bit of a tidbit, newsworthy item, because we were talking about Mark Hunter being hired as, director of player personnel, right? Like each organization has different titles and different roles of people within their organization. You sometimes wonder, like, why so many people? Like, do we have too many? Do you need more? You've got a director of amateur scouting, which is Dave Morrison. You've got a director of pro scouting, which would be Steve Casper, right? And so now you've got a director of player personnel, who is Mark Hunter, that is going to do both amateur and pro and make recommendations to the amateur scouts. So anyways, it's just, I just find it interesting in creating a position where you look at some of the other organizations and you might as well say, like in Montreal, okay, that would be Rick Dudley, you know, and he would be the guy to Mark Bergevin. And you have Larry Carrier there, and you have Trevor Timmons, and you know what I'm saying?
Well, first of all, when it comes to the key word, Aussie, and this is what I worry about in all seriousness on the Leafs side, is efficiencies. Is it I don't care whether it's big or small. Is it an efficient organization? Does it operate in a cohesive manner? Is it splintered or not splintered? Does everyone feel valued in what they do? Do they contribute? Mm-hmm. Are they competent?
This has nothing to do with, you know, Mark Hunter. I think it's a great hire.
We sat down. You were there when Larry Carrier dropped by with Rick Dudley. Mm-hmm. You know, you said it's the Buffalo gang that's running Montreal. Mm-hmm. Mark Bergevin, all those guys. And you really get how fluid and how it works and seamlessly, and they're in sync there in Montreal. I'm not saying they're not in Toronto. I'm just saying there's a lot of people. And some of them are holdovers from Brian Burke's era. Some of them are Dave Nonis's era. I know his era is not over now, but it's Brendan Shanahan's era. So there's a little bit of what seems like could be duplication or other things. But as long as, you know, that's Brendan Shanahan's job to make sure he has an efficient and effective organization.
Okay, at the end of the day, okay, here's a comparison, because we might as well talk about this, because this is something that I want to know. You were a GM, you know, at the end of the day, and the buck stopped with you. So when hockey decisions are being made, in most organizations, if I was to make the comparison in Montreal, like Mark Bergevin's making the decisions. Yes, he's got to get approval by his ownership in Jeff Molson, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day. So here in Toronto, I mean, is it Brendan Shanahan?
Yes. Yes.
So what about Dave Nonis? Does he have to run everything and pass everything by Brendan?
That's
with anything that he does? With anything that he does as GM?
He's the top.
So how do you feel, how would you feel about that role as GM? Is that
what Dave Nonis is?
Yeah.
I feel good with four years left on my contract. I feel good.
Okay.
You know, that's what I mean. He's not the number one hockey guy like he was for a while.
But how can you feel good about doing that job now? Did he hire Kyle Dubas in the analytical department? Did he hire Mark Hunter?
No.
Did he hire the assistant coaches?
No, that's why it shows his role is different that way. But Lance Hornby of the Toronto Sun joining us, 5-2 win over the New York Islanders tonight. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne with Leafs Nation postgame on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And hey, Lance Rue, why don't you jump in on what Ozzy, you know, like I said, very constructive points, because Ozzy's trying to get, you know, apprenticing about how organizations work or don't work. And it's a bit of a challenging animal to figure it all out right now with a big organization and hopefully an efficient organization ultimately with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well, it's interesting because you have a team president still kind of learning on the job, overseeing the general manager who has a lot of experience, so that's certainly an awkward situation. And then, of course, the general manager, probably as you guys have alluded to, is working in a couple of guys in Kyle Dubas and Brandon Pridham, who are also new on the job. And you have Randy Carlyle, who's working with two assistants that he hired on top of some moves over the summer that possibly weren't of his doing. So, yeah, there's a lot of moving parts going on here. But, so far they've found a way to make it work. I think it may, it may all blow up at the end of the season. And, a game like tonight indicates that they can get it together on certain nights. We'll have to see what shakes down. Long season. They're playing 500 now, but we'll have to see what happens.
Lance, you were mentioning, I heard you, this is your last visit to Long Island, as a member of the media. I think the Leafs play there one more time before the Islanders move to Brooklyn. Is this one of the most fondest memories in your time covering the Maple Leafs in their 5-2 win?
You know, for listeners of a certain vintage, I go back to watching Lanny McDonald score the goal on, Game 7 eliminated the Islanders, which is the night actually I had to write my entrance exam to get into Centennial College. So I rushed through it because I wanted to get home and see that game. I know, I'm sure Gordy was was in the same situation. You know, a lot of people in Toronto remembering that goal, of course. And not much has changed here in Long Island as far as the arena goes. It's still there. Still has kind of the old you know, the old creaks and groans that an old arena does. But I'm sure a lot of people will miss it when it comes down. But a great you know, they do have four Stanley Cup banners hanging here, and no one can take that away.
Yeah, I certainly remember the Lanny McDonald goal in the big way. You're right about that. It's it was yeah, Roger Nielsen's the best of times that way. Are you aware that this is the first time that they scored four goals in a period on Long Island since October 26, 1988?
Oh, I'm sure if I had had 2 minutes to look that up, I would have. But I bow to your superior knowledge in that respect. But you know, it was an impressive period. You know, it looked like it was going to be a rough night. Randy Carlyle saying right after the game that, you know, the game plan, the Islanders, this year's Islanders anyway, you know, they come at you kind of like Chicago did at Old Chicago Stadium. First 5-10 minutes, they're all over you. If you can weather that storm, you're okay. But, you know, Toronto's had some bad times here and in recent years. And tonight's a night where, you know, Kessel certainly was finding the range. They get a fortunate bounce in the Van Riemsdyk goal, and they're off to the races.
Just so I'll tell you before, by the way, that four-goal game, Mark Osborne sitting next to me had three assists. Two goals by Ed Olczyk, one by Vinny Domfus, and one by Todd Gill in 1988. Just so you know, Lance, if you, when you're doing your Sunday column. Little nugget for
well,
you.
Well, yeah, probably Ozzy remembers it better than I do.
No, I didn't remember any of those assists. Gordon knew him better than I did. But just getting back to Phil Kessel, as you mentioned, Lance, and almost I'm kind of taking Phil's expression after the first goal where he really smiled. I mean, a typical Phil Kessel shot, you know, coming down the wing. He had two of those. He had an assist. And lo and behold, he's sitting in third in league scoring. Tavares has got 10 points. Nash, Marlowe, and Crosby have 9, and Kessel's got 8.
So Phil Kessel's having a terrible season at times that he's third in the NHL in scoring. How often have you heard that song?
What he could do if he was in shape.
I know. How often have you heard that song, right?
Well, you know what? It's you know, I think he had two goals coming in, and Van Riemsdyk had the joke after the game that Kessel was ready to trade in his stick to break him or order a new pattern or something because things weren't working for him. But he certainly found the range tonight, and when Van Riemsdyk scores, and I think someone beside me mentioned that in all three games they've won, Kessel has scored. So you know. Clearly, there's that old correlation with as Kessel goes, sometimes go the Leafs. But let's not overlook the goaltending of Bernier tonight. Very sharp when he had to be. 17 shots, I think, in the third period.
Hey, Lance, I know Gord is not a fan of this. He's not a fan of seven defense. And he asked me a question while we were watching the game is, when's the last real good team that employed seven defense on a team and actually had some type of success? It worked for tonight for the Maple Leafs. They play in Ottawa tomorrow night. Your thoughts of the 7D and how the overall team performed with that makeup?
Well, it was you know, it was kind of touch and go during the day. Nobody was sure if Percy was going to suit up or not. And I did ask Carlisle after the game, and he was very you know, honest about not maybe, you know, without coming out and saying it, that certainly he's had some issues maybe with some depth on the fourth line. He thought going with 7D would allow him to rotate some other wingers through that fourth line and maybe give Peter Holland and Richard Panik a chance to play with some skill. And, you know, I think Panik had a breakaway, almost scored. Dave Clarkson had that weird goal. I think he was out with him at the end there that didn't count. But, you know, another way that he's trying to get someone like Holland some more ice time is to put him on the PK, which is playing okay as well. And seven defensemen, not a bad idea. You know, I think if you're going to keep Stu Percy up, you have to get him into some games. And, you know, he's certainly not hurt himself. Maybe you protect a guy like Robidoux or Pollock. And tonight I thought Pollock had a great game from a physical sense. He went after Clutterbuck when he had to, when he ran over Geoffrey Lupul and scored a goal on his old St. Louis teammate. So not a bad game for Roman Pollock.
Lance Hornby joining Gord Stellick and Mark Osborne, a Leafs Nation postgame brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Best thing I thought last couple of games, Lance Roux, is just Jonathan Bernier. You know, two indifferent starts and, you know, coming back from sports hernia is surgery. So it'd been a while since he'd had a decent run like he's had those last two games. So that's key for him to get in, you know, get in that vibe, get in that moment.
Well, I thought it was, too much was made, I think, of the first couple of starts he had. You know, he was just that one bad bounce away from taking a point off the Canadians in the opener when not a lot of Leafs were playing well. They were obviously pretty jumpy, I thought, in the season opener. But last couple of games, that's the old Bernier. You know, his Leaf crest is where rebounds go to die, because a lot of you know, his positioning there. There, people are firing into his chest, and he made a couple of dandy glove saves tonight as well. One of them off Nikolai Kuhlman had a pretty good shot at him as well.
Hey, Lance Aroux. I mean, how did Gord give you that pet name, by the way? You know, Lance Aroux, but
Billy Waters did.
Billy Waters did?
I think. Yep. I don't know.
Oh, you mentioned Nikolai Kuhlman.
Good name for everybody.
Yeah. You mentioned Nikolai Kuhlman and
Nikolai.
You know, just kind of curious, you know, as to how he reacted playing against his old team for the first time. I remember those games very, very well. Or on the other end, how did the players react to playing against a guy who was a real workhorse here during his time for the Maple Leafs?
Well, as you know, Kuhlman's not the most demonstrative of people. We caught up to him yesterday after practice. I think it's sort of a, you know, as much as he would let on, a very emotional game, I think. You know, you play 6 years with the team that drafted you in Toronto. He had a lot of friends in the Russian community here, and I think that was hard to leave. But he also felt it was a good move, you know, if he was not in the Leafs' plans, to come to a team that needed him, needed that, you know, that big body, and maybe, you know, to, if not to score, certainly then to be a good puck possession person. And he gets to play again with Grabowski, obviously, a friend going back a long ways. And they're, you know, they've hit it off here. They're very happy, and apparently both very encouraged that next year the team's going to Brooklyn, where there's an even bigger Russian community, so they'll be even more at home.
Lance, thanks as always.
Okay, guys, appreciate that.
Look forward, Lance Hornby, of course, the Toronto Sun. Look forward to his work. We will chat a little bit. Let's talk. We're talking about Mark Hunter before Lance joined us. Mark Hunter was on Primetime Sports earlier today. He's the Toronto Maple Leafs' new director of player personnel. And just a couple of quick things. We first chat about why he took the job.
Number one thing, I got four kids, and they're all in university left. And it's a good time for me to spend even more time on the road, which I can, I don't feel guilty with my family. So that was huge for me. But then the Leafs, of course, I mean, it's a franchise that, you know, our family, and we're from Ontario, from Petroya. We grew up watching the Leafs play, and it's been really nice to be asked to be a part of the Toronto Maple Leafs organization, and where I can hopefully help the process of finding more players.
Hey, let's face it, Ozzie, none of this crap about the house is empty. He needs the money for university. Four kids in university, holy mackerel.
Hey, I don't think he needs the money. I think those boys are doing pretty well.
Well, next up, he talks about, you know, fitting in with an organization, how he thinks he fits in with the team and the organization.
Well, you know what, I'm going to be, you know, helping out with, you know, the amateur scouting. And I'm going to be helping with the pro scouting and player evaluations. So them three things I'm going to be, you know, I don't know if overseeing, I guess it's overseeing and watching and judging and be a part of scouting and being out on the road to hopefully we can find more players and make the league stronger and get into the playoffs and this in the cup.
Did Brendan approach you personally on this?
Kind of both, Dave and Brendan. And I met with them about maybe 8 days ago now, and so it was a good conversation, and we met a couple times, not just once, maybe three times. We went through things, so it was a good conversation. And you know what? I've seen we're all on the same page, which is great, and have the same idea what kind of players we're looking for.
I think some of the other scouts will say, well, are you overseeing it or not? Well, we will find out rather shortly. The understanding is he will be overseeing it. And he talked about conversations with Brendan Shanahan and Dave Nonis, and he was asked what he asked the Toronto Maple Leafs in particular.
Well, you know what? You know, what position what I would take, what I was going to do, and what I was going to oversee. I mean, you know, I mean nothing against being just a territory guy of Ontario. I wanted more than that, and I want to be responsible for what the draft is, where it's going, and myself and Dave Morris will be in. You know, we'll be looking at players and be given the ideas that they've noticed of what we want and, Brandon, what we're looking for.
There's Mark Hunter, the off-ice news for the Toronto Maple Leafs today, hired as director of player personnel to their front office. The on-ice news, a 5-2 win over the New York Islanders tonight. They're in Ottawa tomorrow. Road, sweet road. It's been Aussie as they take on the Ottawa Senators. So we'll be back at it right after the game tomorrow, as always. Where you want to tune in for all 82 Toronto Maple Leaf games, both home and away. What's your gut feeling? We thought we had a pretty good feeling today about the island. What's your feeling with Ottawa?
Well, you know what? I think we're feeling pretty well the same way, although I did hear Clark MacArthur earlier today talking about what this team has been able to do thus far, like they did a couple of years ago, where they're probably not going to score a lot of goals. They're relying on their goaltender, have to play a much more conservative type of style and workmanlike attitude. That's been the success for them thus far.
Robin Lehner and Craig Anderson, two goaltenders, playing like they did 2 years ago, not last year. So it's been going to be, it looks like, hopefully a great battle of Ontario. We'll be on right when the game ends tomorrow. 5-2, the Leafs over the New York Islanders. You've been listening to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers with Gord Stellick and Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.